It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 389 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so very much for listening. This week is the return of Alexander Bankita, the creator of an upcoming comic from Scout Comics called Headless. It's a modern take on the legend of the Headless Horseman, and Alex has done a wonderful job of bringing it to creation. We talk about how it came to be, as well as who the characters are, and many other good things, including the comics industry, what it's like to be an indie creator who brings a comic to Scout, as well as other things going on. Be sure to go to your local comic shop and order Headless from Scout Comics. It's always a fun conversation with Alex, and I can't wait for you to listen to it. So let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk with Alexander Bankita, the creator of such good things as Captives. Let's see, other ones. Hard Tales you did, Alexander?
Champions of Earth?
Yes, that's right. Champions of Earth, which are all of that stuff I really did like. And you've got a new book coming out, which I actually have a chance to read and talk about, which is called Headless.
Yes.
How you doing, Alex?
I'm fantastic. I'm doing so well right now. It's great. Yeah, Headless is on pre-order right now, which is super exciting for me. Mm-hmm. It's been a great experience. And what's weird is I talked to you when I just started making the book, and now I'm on the other side of the book, where mm-hmm. the book is done. Like, it's the art is done. It just needs to be lettered, the last few issues. But all the writing's done. And I really like the way the book turned out. Mm-hmm. It's just been such a phenomenal experience to get to work on it and really let it kind of become what it was going to be. And what's fun with me about this book is just Robert has been such a great influence on the book, and his art style really kills it. And he has such a – what's funny about this book is that it was an idea I came up with a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And when I pitched it to Robert, I showed him the script for it and some art I had made for it. And he goes, that's great, but I was wondering if we could add this and this and that and that. And I feel like all of his contributions have really made the book into something that I love. It's been such a great experience to take something like the Headless Horseman and the Salem Witch Trials and then have it take place in the 80s and then have this super cool, you know, art style with the blue and the pink, And for me, it's been such a great experience. And I'm so happy that, you know, it got to be completed, and to get picked up by Scout was even better. So that's just phenomenal for me. I'm super excited about it.
Well, I'm big on Scout Comics because I've gotten to know those folks over time. And of course, the book that I edit on is also out there too, Stabby Bunny. But when I first saw Headless, I was really impressed because it's not your standard comic.
No.
The art and the coloring and the script is different from what I'm used to reading, which of course I love. I'm tired of the same old stuff. So when I read your stuff, I always enjoy the characters. I also enjoy the pacing. I also like it. You like to do spins on fairy tales and stuff like that. Like mm-hmm. Hard Tales was a Three Little Pigs kind of setup. Mm-hmm. And this one is Headless Horseman. So there's something about classic tales that seems to inspire you.
I really like taking things that I like. And, you know, fortunately, they're in the public domain. So you can take something you like. But I think what I always think about in the back of my head is I go, okay, I feel like I always write for myself if I was 15 years old. Mm. It sounds weird, but I feel like if I walked into a comic book store, what kind of book would I want to read about the Headless Horseman? Mm. And this was it. Like I've always liked the Headless Horseman. I thought the Headless Horseman was really cool. Mm-hmm. And I've also always liked the Salem Witch Trials. Mm-hmm. And I'm obsessed with the 80s. Mm-hmm. I feel like anybody who follows me on Facebook, all I do is post 80s stuff like constantly. And which what I find weird about my work is that I think I've done a weird job of kind of separating myself from a lot of modern pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm personally kind of oddly dated as a creator like all, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but what I'm saying is all this stuff I really like is probably from 20 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. And to get to work on this book, the way I go about what I do, I question, I'm like, do people even like approach things the same way anymore? And I don't know, because I mean, I'll read some modern stuff, but it's not what I'm into. I don't like it. I feel like the vast majority of the modern stuff I read comes out of Japan. Mm-hmm. Or, and then, you know, like an exciting weekend for me is to rent a movie from the 80s or earlier. Like that's, I can't wait to do that. Like, and it, what's nice is that there's so much content out there that you really don't, and I think this is a product of the time we live in, which is great. You really don't have to get into stuff from the time, you know, you're in. Like if you want to watch movies only from the 50s or read books only from the 50s, you can. Mm-hmm. And there's so much material out there that becomes what you're into. Mm-hmm. But I question as a creator, am I oddly out of the loop? And I might be. I don't know. But I don't know if that's a good thing. It might be.
I think it is a good thing because, you know, we don't necessarily need the same kind of thing that everybody else is writing. We like something, at least I do, I know for sure, I like something that is variety, that goes places I haven't been, or at least I haven't been in a while. I like what you're doing. I think that's a great way to do it. So I don't mind the fact that you're, you know, that you're into the 80s and you have some 80s sensibilities in some of the things you do.
Yeah, I think what, and also something I try really hard to do as a comic book creator is I try really hard to approach something in a way that is new, even though it's old, right? I mean, this is, you know, I mean, it's not old, but it takes place in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And my logic is, okay, this takes place in the 80s, but my job is to make a Headless Horseman comic no one has ever read before. Mm-hmm. And now that I finally have the whole thing done, mm-hmm. I'm very proud to say, when you read this book and when you really, I feel like issue one is such a small taste of what's to come. Mm-hmm. It's like when you walk into a restaurant, it's like the salad. Mm-hmm. It's not even the appetizer, it's the salad. Mm-hmm. And for me, issue two mm-hmm. is really when the book starts to take off. And something I kind of take pride in, I've had a lot of people say this to me, is that I didn't see things going that way. Mm-hmm. And I really like that you turned it around, or you took it in a direction I didn't expect. And that's, to me, that's what's exciting about anything you get into, is that, you know, when you really start to get into a story or something, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but I think the tendency is, I do this all the time when I read books or I watch movies or anything, I can predict exactly what's going to happen. This is going to happen. And then I think it's also part of being a writer. You know what the writer is doing. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, for mm-hmm. example, I love, you know, the original Star Wars trilogy. Mm-hmm. But I can call the first Star Wars movie, you can call the whole thing the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what's going to happen, basically. And mm-hmm. that's not bad. I like that. Like, I'm waiting for it. Mm-hmm. But I think to myself, okay, if you're going to tell a Headless Horseman story, you have to give somebody a Headless Horseman story they've never read. Mm-hmm. And you have to handle it in a way that will make them come back, because they've never seen anything like this before. And I think the challenge for me is I try my best to give something somebody's never seen before, but at the same time, structure it in a way and write it in a way that it still works. And it has a lot of the fundamentals of storytelling, but at the same time, it's constantly throwing curveballs at you. And this is going to sound, I don't know if this is going to sound pretentious, but I feel like as a writer, what I try really hard to do is to try to almost control the vibe of how the reader feels. Mm-hmm. I think to myself, okay, the reader probably feels this way right now, so I'm going to try to make them feel this way, and then I'm going to turn it the other way if I can. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the craft is to try to do it smoothly, mm-hmm. and if you do it right, they don't know you're doing it. Mm-hmm. That to me is the ultimate level of craft, is that if you can do something in a way that people don't realize you're doing it, you did a really good job.
Mm-hmm. The end of the first issue surprised me.
That's what I was aiming for. I remember when I wrote that issue, I thought to myself, I want to set up the story this way, and then I want to turn it on its head immediately, and I want to end on that. And then I want the story to go in a direction that I don't think a lot of people were expecting, mm-hmm. and enjoy it, you know? And mm-hmm. for me, it's been such a great experience. I feel like when I wrote this book, mm-hmm. to be fair, like, Robert is so incredibly good at what he does mm-hmm. that's a huge advantage for me. I mean, I've worked with Robert for a while. We did a lot of issues of Captives together. Mm-hmm. He has such a great sensibility of how to tell a story and how to make things work in a way. And from my perspective, it looks effortless. Mm-hmm. He makes it look so easy. Mm-hmm. And then I remember once I was looking at one of his tweets and he was talking about working on Headless. And he was saying how it's always these certain pages that kill me. These certain pages are so hard for me. But he makes it look so seamless. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something I really, for me, it's almost like, who's the famous guitarist from the Smiths? Is it Johnny Mars?
I guess.
Somebody's going to light me up for that. There's this like really solid guitarist in the Smiths. I think it's Johnny Mars. And then, you know, getting to work with Morrissey and to make that whole thing come together. So in my mind, that's what it's like to get to work with Robert. It's like, this guy is so solid. He's mm-hmm. so good at what he does. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, like, one day Robert is going to be so big that he's not going to return my calls, possibly. Like, that's how I feel about mm-hmm. And he makes it look so good, and he has such a great sense of style. So bringing him onto this project, to me, made it what it was going to be, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like destiny. That sounds a little weird, but he made it into this thing that works so well. And both him and I were so excited about it. So yeah, he just killed it. And so that's part of it for me too. It wasn't just the writing. It was to see the pages coming in and think to myself, oh, this is so good. This is so good. I literally have moments he would send me pages and I would bring my wife into the room. I'm like, look at this. Look at this. Look at what he did. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that's so, as a writer, you know, I feel incredibly fortunate. And also to get to work with Scout is amazing too, because mm-hmm. something I was actually a little scared of is that I think as any creator, I've been self-publishing for a while, so you're so used to kind of being at the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. Once you work with a publisher, there's this fear, for me anyway, mm-hmm. that they're going to kind of come in and say, no, you can't do this, you can't do that, or we're going to change this, and there's going to be this heavy hand of, you know, editorial. And Scout's not like that at all so far from my experience.
That's good. We should mention one thing, though, that Robert's last name is Ahmad, if I'm not mistaken.
Ahmad, yeah, Robert Ahmad, yeah. I might have pronounced that badly, A-H-M-A-D.
Yeah, but we want to get that in there. But, you know, Scout is that way.
It's great.
Well, Scout is one of those companies that lets creators create, which I think is something that's important for them. You know, and it's just a great thing. And I'm, you know, when I found out you were going to be on in Scout, I thought this is going to be great because you're going to get to tell your story.
And to kind of, you know, keep going in that direction is that, to me, Scout, I see the work they're putting out. And when I walk into a comic book store, that's the stuff I want to buy. Mm-hmm. It's so different and it's so interesting. And it's so, to me, Scout reminds me of like Dark Horse back in the day. Mm-hmm. Not to begrudge Dark Horse now, but there's something about a company when they're, you know, kind of in the beginning of their process, they're still newer. And I just feel like Dark Horse in the beginning, they were just seeking out these super interesting books. Like I love, you know, Madman, for example, love it. And I love Usagi Yojimbo. And then you got all these super interesting books like Concrete and all this kind of stuff. And I feel like that's what Scout is doing right now. Mm-hmm. So for me to be at the beginning of that is so exciting. And I remember even when I was putting Headless together in my head, I'm like, this is a book that I don't think a lot of people are going to get. Mm-hmm. And I, it's not that I think people won't like it, but I just remember, you know, there's that mentality when you're a creator, like, can I pitch this and someone's going to think this is just weird, you know? And Scout was like, oh yeah, absolutely. This is great. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, to see the support they've been giving me has just been fantastic. So it's been a phenomenal experience for me.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the things I did, I tried to do research before I do an interview. I looked around to try to see where Headless has been covered. And there's just this mountain of websites that have took the news release. I'm looking at ComicCon.com. I'm looking at ComicWatch.com, Outright Geekery, mm-hmm. Comic List.
Yeah, it's been great.
Pullbox, and I think Sci-Fi, I think also.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of coverage of this, so I'm having, you know, good feelings. Chris, let's talk a little bit, because before the first issue comes out, there's already been an Ashcan. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. What's interesting about the ash can is that Scout approached me and they said, look, we're doing an ash can. Can you give us the files for issue one? And I said, sure. And then Robert put a cover together and it's like a pretty cool, interesting cover. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of knocked it out. And the only thing about the ash can, I will say, and this is actually what makes it very unique. I actually don't have one. I'd like to get one.
Let James know that. I think he'll be glad to get you one because they have them at the headquarters.
What's interesting about the ash can is that I have made some slight changes to the first issue. Because when you actually have the whole book finished, what I always do is I always go back and kind of slightly change things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, maybe I'll rewrite this in a different way now that I kind of know exactly how everything plays out. So I feel like the print issue will be slightly different than the ash can issue. So for me, that's almost like getting like the demo tape of a song before it comes out. So that's what's exciting me about the ash can is, I was pumped. And even they put out the free comic book day book. Mm-hmm. And that was exciting for me too. You know, and I remember when I got that, I just remember showing it to people. I remember it was a weird moment. Mm-hmm. For me, as somebody who's self-publishing, and not through Diamond, right? Mm-hmm. Just kind of guerrilla, you know, go to stores. And I live in Seattle. I go to stores in Seattle. And people, and by the way, Seattle has a great comic book community, just to put that out there. Mm-hmm. Stores here are really cool. Comics Dungeon, really good about putting my stuff on the shelves. They have, like, Captives books in there and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Xanadu, which was, like, a big shop in Seattle, they actually closed down just recently, which is a bummer. Wow. But anyway, they were really cool. So I remember walking into Comics Dungeon, actually. I really hope that's the name. I'm going to be a monster if I get that wrong. But I'm like 99.9% sure. No, that's it, Comics Dungeon. I remember walking into the store and just picking up that free comic book day preview. And I was like, man, that's awesome. That's great. I just walked in and picked it up. And yeah, it's been super exciting. And I don't know where I was going with that. I feel like I always trail off. So.
Well, you're doing really well with that because the thing of it is you've reached a level now that's you're moving and going up the ladder as you do these good things. You know, at first it's a big deal to self-publish because you know you get to see your creations actually on paper and for sale in stores and stuff. But then when a publisher picks you up, then some of those functions are out of your hands, and when you see them actually happen, that's quite exhilarating. I'm sure it's just a wonderful thing to see.
Well, it's a weird, exciting moment. You know, there's, I feel like you get hit with this weird moment of pressure, right? Mm-hmm. Where you look at things, you're like, oh, maybe I could have done this or that. But then at the same time, it's exciting to get to walk into a comic shop and there's your stuff right there, right? And I think every creator has that moment. But for me, just to go from I have an idea to I'm going to do X, then I'm going to actually put it out. Then now this stuff is in stores. It's a very exciting process, and it's something I try really hard to try to find the words for it, like cherish. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a rare moment as a creator, and I feel like it's important, and it's something I'm grateful for, and I try really hard to just take it in. Yeah. You know, this is this, and this exact moment is not going to happen again. It's almost like your this is going to sound weird. It's like your first kiss, right? Does that make sense?
This is your first experience with this kind of stuff at this level,
right? You know, it's super exciting, and also just to even like my father lives in Florida, and I remember saying to my dad, "Yeah, this just go to any store in Florida and just tell them you want to pre-order the book," and that was exciting just to be like, he's like, "Which one?" I'm like, "Anyone, it doesn't matter." But back when you're self-publishing, you know, it's certain stores and certain places. So for me, it's been great. And one thing I'm really grateful for is, and I think every comic book creator out there should do this, I think it's really good to start out self-publishing, especially with things like Comixology, which is amazing to me because I can literally go up to anybody and go, just grab your phone and download the app and you can get my stuff. Like, that's amazing to me. Mm-hmm. So once you get there, to take it to the next level is super exciting. I remember saying to my wife, I said, it's the first time I walked into a store and something is there that I didn't put. You know, it's a great moment. And I don't know, like, I know there's a lot of people out there who are very I want to use the word cynical about the comic book industry. Mm-hmm. There's all this like doom and gloom, and I'm very optimistic. Mm-hmm. I think the American comic book industry has so much room to grow. Mm-hmm. It has so much room to kind of explode. Mm-hmm. And to be a part of it, mm-hmm, is super exciting for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, as a comic book creator, my goal is to kind of be, my big goal is to be like the next like Tezuka of the United States. Like, I, mm-hmm, feel like look at industries like the Japanese comic book industry, mm-hmm, and it doesn't have that level of, now I could be wrong, but, mm-hmm, to me, from an outside perspective, mm-hmm, it doesn't have that level of potential explosive growth, mm-hmm, that the industry does in the United States right now. Mm-hmm. So, and America has easily some of the amazing comic book creators, mm-hmm, and some of the best artists out there. It's just, it's such a good time, I feel, to be a comic book creator right now, especially too with everything that's going on. I remember back in the day, you know, when you're reading comics and you're in your room and nobody even knows what comic books are. But now, because comic books have blown up into movies and television, mm-hmm, and video games and all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm, when you even tell a person you make comics, they get, mm-hmm, excited. Mm-hmm. You tell a person, I'm going to a comic book convention, and they're like, oh, can I go? You know, like, mm-hmm, that to me is great. That's, mm-hmm, so exciting. And I think it's such a great time to be a comic book creator. Mm-hmm. And it's again, like a precious moment, mm-hmm, to be a comic book creator. Because what if it suddenly blows up and it's not like that anymore? I mean, the fact you can go to a comic book convention and actually meet the people making the stuff, mm-hmm, is amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. You know, think of the movie industry. Mm-hmm. I can't just go to MovieCon and, mm-hmm, and meet Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. You can go to a comic book convention and meet, like, you know, the best, you know, artists in the industry, right? Like, the, mm-hmm, biggest, hottest guy. You can meet them. And that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. That's good for the industry, though, because what it does is it helps fans feel invested. They meet this person. They get invested. You know, they liked it before, but now I've actually met him, and they take pictures with them, and, you know, they get their autograph kind of stuff. And it helps, I think, with the industry, because it helps everybody move forward. Because we've got fans that are true fans that want this kind of stuff and are looking forward to the next things you're going to do.
Yeah, it's something that's really great about the industry right now. And I hope it never goes away, personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Japan, but I would imagine, you know, in Japan, I can't just go meet Akira Toriyama, the guy who makes Dragon Ball. Like, I can't just do that. I can't just walk into a show and be like, oh, there he is. You know, maybe there's a line I have to wait in for a half hour, but I get to meet Akira Toriyama. I don't think that's possible. Apparently, I've heard rumors that in Japan, these people can't even go outside. Hmm. Like, they can't even leave their house, mm-hmm, because people lose their mind because they, mm-hmm, know what they look like. And, mm-hmm, to be at that point right now is super exciting to me. It's almost, mm-hmm, like something I really liked was do you remember the black and white glut and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
It was, you know, before my time. But, like, to me, that must have been such an exciting time to be in comics. Mm-hmm. Been super exciting. I actually have a ton of random black and white glut comics. Mm-hmm. And what's fun too is I actually occasionally will look up the creators of those books and like find them somewhere online and email them just for fun. Mm-hmm. The fact that there was that level of enthusiasm of, mm-hmm, people saying, you know, I want to make a comic book about a ninja, mm-hmm, who is in space, mm-hmm, and fights this. And they just did it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where comics is right now, especially with companies like Scout. You know, they just put out that book, Metal Shark Bro. Is that, mm-hmm, what it's called? Mm-hmm. And I remember just seeing it and being like, yes, yes. Like, yes, thank you. That's amazing to me. That, mm-hmm, it's a shark who's like a guitar player and like all this kind of fun, super exciting stuff. And I think just, mm-hmm, because comics is in this place now where people are saying, yeah, we like, you know, Marvel and DC, mm-hmm, but I don't want to, you know, read Batman today. I, mm-hmm, want to see a shark who plays guitar. Mm-hmm. Right, like, and that to me is super exciting. So, like, back to the black and white glut, what I used to do was I would go to like flea markets, mm-hmm, and whenever I would find long boxes with anything from the black and white glut, I just buy them. I'm like, yes, I gotta buy it. Mm-hmm. I have to get it.
Wow. Well, you know, hopefully it's that era is going on again right now, because there is a lot of creativity. It's, you know, as somebody who writes columns about the industry and stuff, I keep noticing new companies, you know, coming along. Vault. other ones that are going along. I just ran across one. I don't remember the name of it, but it was just getting started. You know, there's Ahoy, which started in the last year or so. There's a whole bunch of different comics companies going on, and it's just a great time. I think the creativity and the you know, storytelling, I think it's unparalleled. I think it's just great stuff.
It's great. And the talent that's out there just blows you away. I remember, like, you know, when I'm looking for artists to work with, you go to a show and you see some of these people's stuff and you're like, I can't believe you're just some guy, you know, sitting at a table right now. The level of talent and exuberance and excitement is such a great time to be in comics. Like, it's almost, this might sound silly, but it's almost like, I feel like what it almost felt like being Stan Lee back in the day. You know, you got all these amazing guys walking into Marvel and all these, it's just crazy. And I think a big part of that too is the internet. I think the internet has made it so easy for creators from any place to be able to hook up with other creators. Like, for example, Robert Ahmad lives in England. And I've never actually met him, which hopefully one day I will. But to just be able to find a person's stuff and say, hey, just, you know, let's work on something together. And then they can just scan pages and send them to you. That's incredible to me. That's incredible. And you have guys from all over the world just being able to hook up. And like, if you, like, you couldn't do that, for example, if you were a musician. I mean, maybe you could if you didn't do live shows. But if you're doing live shows, you can't just get a guy from England to play drums and a guy from, you know, another place playing guitar. Like, the fact that you can do that in comics, I think, is part of the reason why you're seeing such an interesting, you know, product being created. And I think something I really love about the American industry is that, although there's things I certainly don't like, but one of the things I really do like is such a huge, drastic difference in art styles. You know, you look at manga, and obviously manga can be drawn in a lot of very different ways, but there is a sense of a house style. How we do things. And some people will go the other way. Like, I really love Berserk, Kentaro Miura. I probably mispronounced that. But he kind of goes off a different way versus the traditional style, but it's not so drastically different. But in America, you look at a book like, I don't know, Metal Shark, let's use that. You look at the way that's drawn versus the way Jim Lee draws. It's night and day. It's completely different. And that's awesome to have that level of freedom as a creator, you know. And I think that's the beauty of the industry right now, is that because it's trying so many different things, you're getting so many interesting styles and writing styles and ideas. And I felt like I took notice of that early on. And that's why when I made Headless, I said to myself, this is the Headless Horseman comic you have never read before. That's what I told myself. You will never have read this before. And it's, I'm going to do my best to give somebody a story that they're going to say, I don't know where this came from. I don't know what this is, but I like it. Right? That's cool for me.
That's good. Because, well, let's dive into the book a little bit, because there's some interesting things that go on. You mentioned the colors and the choice of colors. I was reading somebody who thought that the pink happened when it was a video game and the blue was reality, but that's not necessarily true, because I've seen some pink outside of the video games.
I think what happened was that evolved over time. Was, I think when we were starting out, originally I think Robert wanted to use one color, and then he decided to use two. And I think what started happening was, as the book progressed artistically, he started making very specific choices of when he wants to use pink and when he wants to use blue. So, for example, like, sometimes he might color, and he also sometimes colors nothing. So, for example, like, a certain part of the face might just be white, and then he'll throw in a highlight, but he'll use pink, and then he'll make the character's jacket blue. So I think as the book progresses, and I don't want to speak on Robert's behalf, I don't know what his thought process is, but the way it comes across to me is he starts to really get a sense of, I want to make this pop. And the way I can do it is, I want to draw focus to this. So, for example, if the character is primarily blue, but I want you to look at the character's face, I'm going to give that character pink highlights. And it's such a cool look. And I think Robert, over time, started to go in that direction. And honestly, as the book keeps – I showed you some of the pages from issue two. As the book keeps going, I think he really comes into that style and he kind of makes it his own, and it looks incredible. And I remember thinking to myself, and this is all him. Like, I didn't even think about doing this. Mm-hmm. He just had a certain level of this pops and this looks different and this looks interesting. And even when I saw the cover for the first issue, I thought there was no way I would walk into a comic book store and not at least look at that. Mm-hmm. It draws you in. There's something about it. And even the thing about Robert's work is there's a quietness to it sometimes, where sometimes he loves to mix, you know, it gets explosive and it gets crazy. And he has like these, you see a lot of that in Captives. He has like this kind of fun, like Jack Kirby-esque action. Mm-hmm. But other times he's very into these quiet moments. Mm-hmm. There's a few scenes in some of the issues where characters are in a car. Mm-hmm. And the way he uses the blue to offset the pink, like the rain is pink, but mm-hmm. the car is blue, and then the mm-hmm. rain on the car is pink. It just looks awesome. It reminds mm-hmm. me of almost like Sin City mm-hmm. when he starts using like colors. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that. And to get to work on a book like that with mm-hmm. somebody that talented and has such a good eye mm-hmm. like that, and mm-hmm. to work my story is just fantastic. So for me, it's such a great out the gate for me, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. kind of break out and be like, this is what I'm putting out. And my feeling was, even if it's not your cup of tea, mm-hmm. you're going to say that was different. Mm-hmm. It was something, right? Like it was mm-hmm. something that was so different than what I'm used to. And mm-hmm. it's great. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's super exciting. And what I love about this book too, is that as the story progresses, there are a lot of kind of, for me, when I was writing it, there are a lot of kind of quiet moments about people dealing with a horrific situation. Because mm-hmm. the story really is about this monster that appears mm-hmm. and everybody gets drawn into this conspiracy and mm-hmm. everybody gets dragged into something that is much bigger than them. Mm-hmm. And I actively wanted to write moments that were quiet mm-hmm. because just like real people, there are moments where it's a lot and you mm-hmm. need time to compress. And there are a lot of quiet moments in that book, and Robert just kills it. He just kills it. It's almost like they put the ball on the tee for him. He just mm-hmm. knocks it apart. So that's what's so fun about working on this book, is that it has a lot of moments where there's a lot going on, and then these moments where it gets quiet. And I feel the art style contributes so much to it that I couldn't see this book looking a different way now.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask you something, because as I was looking over, I noticed that Captives appears in this book.
It does.
Was that your thought, or was that the
me.
Artist?
That was
you, okay.
So, yeah, there was a point where the characters are playing an arcade, mm-hmm. and I said, let's just make it Captives. Mm-hmm. Why not? It's mm-hmm. just funny. It's a nice callback to anybody who's read Captives. And I'm still working on that. I don't know where that's going to go. I've put it on hiatus at the moment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was a nice moment. And I remember Robert immediately was like, I love this. He was mm-hmm. like, yes, because he worked on it for so long to just kind of mm-hmm. do a – that's a really fun thing to do as a creator, is to kind of call back to work you've made in the past mm-hmm. and do it in a funny way.
Well, where you have your logos on the machine.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I smiled when I was looking at that. I said, wait a second, that's the Fright Comics logo on there. And that's fair enough. That's why I had to ask if you wanted that or if he wanted that.
No, it's how funny, that came to be. I wanted the arcade to be Captives, but the Fright logo, that was his idea.
Oh, okay.
And I remember I smirked and thought, nice. That was a good touch. Because I don't want to spoil it. Everyone hasn't read it. The game ends. Mm-hmm. Usually if you play arcades, there's like, you know, that loading screen. Mm-hmm. And he just was like, let me put the Fright logo there. Mm-hmm. But it's subtle because the characters are talking. But mm-hmm. if you look for it, you see it. And you're like, oh, that's a cool – it's a little Easter egg. It's a cool Easter egg. Mm-hmm. And I would love to do more of that in the future. I remember when I did that, I thought, I'm going to do this as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I love stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes it fun to read. Now, I have to talk about the cover that's originally that I've seen. It has four characters on it.
Yes.
It has Chris, who's the main character in the story.
Splinter, yeah.
Is that his brother is to his right?
That's Rick. Yeah, that's his brother.
His brother Rick, a cop named Rick. That's a good thing to do. And then next to Rick is another cop, the female cop that we see. Mm-hmm. And then the thing that really surprised me is the guy on the right. who's the bully with the funny hair and all that stuff, because he goes in there and he bullies you know, Chris and his friends to get their money so that he can play video games.
He's a monster. Yeah, he's a jerk. He's the villain.
So he's got something to do with this story, obviously, because he's on the cover. He's not just a throwaway character who happened to appear in the first issue.
No, he's not. Yeah, I'll say that now. I don't want to spoil anything, but he's not. He's a part of the story. I don't want to spoil anything. And he's a really good character. Actually, honestly, he's one of my favorite characters to write. Let me be careful. But like, I feel like in general, I love writing villains. I don't know. They're just fun to write. There's something about them that they get a lot of good lines. They get a lot of, like, if you read Captives, like, I'm always writing Tor in every scene, because there's something about characters like that that for me is fun to write. And what I love about that character is that I was thinking, all right, he's got to be super 80s, right? Got to look like he's a product of his time, kind of like a Lost Boys thing going on. And I actually watched the movie SLC Punk. And I took certain screenshots from it, and then I found a bunch of other random, you know, punks from the 80s, and I sent it to Robert, and I said, just do you. Do what you think is right. And he came up with that design, and I thought, awesome, perfect. But yeah, he's a part of the story. He's not a throwaway character at all.
Yeah, because when I saw him on what looks to be the cover, I said, uh-oh. I said, he's got something to do with it. And then when I saw him later on, I kind of realized something. Now, I do want to talk about the very first page, because there's some things in the first page that deserve some attention. It says you've got a calendar up on top of the refrigerator. It says it's October. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Halloween is in October.
Yep.
So all this stuff's happening around the Halloween time.
Yes.
That's going to impact the story, I'm sure, too.
Well, yeah, you know, it just kind of goes back to the whole Halloween, spooky ghosts and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And not to spoil too much, it's the first page. The story opens with somebody being murdered, you know, several people being murdered. And it's the opening page, and it is around Halloween time. And it's just kind of part of the mythology. Is that the right word? I don't know. The lore of the story. And what I really like about this comic is that what I tried to do was I tried to say, okay, let's make the Headless Horseman combine with the Salem witch trials. So in this story, the Headless Horseman is a product of the Salem witch trials. The Headless Horseman comes out of the Salem witch trials. And not to spoil anything, but the Headless Horseman is actually somebody from the Salem witch trials. It's a historical figure from this. I mean, I'll just spoil it. It's not a huge deal. It's there's a guy who was killed in the Salem witch trials. He was accused of being a witch. His name is Giles Corey. So that's who the Headless Horseman is. So it connects back to that I'm going to make this very interesting, you know, historical figure. I think Giles Corey's story is very fascinating. Basically what happened was he was accused of being a witch, and his big thing was he never denied it. He just never said I'm not. And one of the last things he said, which is like a big thing he's known for, is they basically they killed him by crushing him with these like big rocks. And his last words, they said, okay, are you going to admit you're a witch now? And apparently what he said was more weight. So they killed him. So I said, that's a really interesting story. More weight was apparently the last thing he said. So I took that and I said, wouldn't it be cool if I made that person the Headless Horseman? I basically did. And everybody else gets thrown into the mix. And there are other levels that I don't want to spoil, which I'm sure you're probably thinking to yourself, okay, well, that I don't want to give away. But I just took the Salem witch trials and I said, let's take this and make it into the Headless Horseman, and let's have it take place in Salem around Halloween time. And also, let's do what we can to make a very interesting version of the Headless Horseman. Although I will say this, he's not entirely the Headless Horseman. He has a head, just not attached very well. So he does have a head, puts it on, it comes off all the time, which for me was just fun. I remember when Robert was designing the Headless Horseman in the story, he always drew him with like a head. And I liked it. And I said, that's really cool. And I said, let's use that. So there's this really old Sega Genesis game called Cap Attack, where the character can rip his own head off and throw it at people, and then like back. And I thought that was cool. And I said, let's go with something like that. I just feel like when you're getting to play with folklore like this, it's really fun to think of a way to do it that's creative. And again, just getting to work with Robert, he has a good sense of, I want to use the word fun. I think he will draw something and say, hey, it'd be cool if we did this. And I completely agree with him. So yes, he's not entirely headless. He has a head, just comes off all the time, and then he can put it back on.
Wow. Okay. So that's great. Now, I do have to point out, and not to spoil anything, but I think the movie Gremlins has an influence on the latter part of the book.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So more now, we won't say. Just say, pay attention for it when it happens.
But, there's, I mean, it's not a huge deal. There's a character in the book who's a demon, and he's actually one of my favorite characters to write. He's incredibly corny. He's incredibly over the top, but every scene with him, I get excited. I'm like, oh boy, I can't wait to write this. And I think Robert, he plays with it a lot. I feel like, I don't know if this is just me as a creator. I think audiences feel this way sometimes. I think as an audience, and Charlie Chaplin, I always talk about this. Charlie Chaplin was really good at this. Sometimes when things get really heavy, you need a release. You need a moment to cool off. And that's what that character is for me. Whenever he pops up, he has this like kind of fun, Gremlins-esque appearance and personality. But what's funny is Robert made him punk rock. He's like, I'm punk rock. So he has like, leather pants and like spikes. And yeah, that's Claw. Every scene with Claw for me is like exciting. It's like, oh man, I love this character. I can't. There. And again, I think that's also a nod to the 80s. That's what we were going for.
Very much. It ends really superbly. Like I said, there's a surprise at the end that really surprised me.
Yes.
You know, appropriate for that. The characters, I think they were really vibrant and alive. You know, it's one of the things when in your writing is I always enjoy the characters because they're not just two-dimensional. They're three-dimensional. It doesn't take you more than a couple panels to help us understand. Like, for example, the cops at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those people are just wow.
My thing is and maybe this is where I'm, I don't know, it's part of the way I like to write. I like to go all in. I feel like all my characters, not all, let me be careful. I feel like a lot of characters I write tend to have very strong personalities. And for me, I'm like, well, if you're going to read this book, I want it to be made very clear very quickly the kind of people these characters are. And I tend to really enjoy writing characters that make you a little uncomfortable. There's something about that I think a lot of writers shy away from. I don't have this weird, I don't care if you don't like my characters. Does that make sense? I want you to enjoy the story. And if a character gets a reaction out of you, my logic is I did my job. And yes, the cops in the beginning of the story are they have very strong personalities. I'm going to use them. And in general, I try to do that. I feel of all the characters in the story, the one who has probably one of the softer personalities is Chris.
Right.
And you need that character, you know, and the story doesn't work without him. Actually, what's funny is in the original idea with the story, his brother was not in the story. He wasn't part of it. And that was actually Robert's idea. Robert said, hey, we should have this character in the story. We should have, you know, his brother. And once I started doing it, I immediately thought this story doesn't work without Robert, without Rick at all. He's such a huge part of the story. And then the other cop character, Sarah, she adds so much to the story as well. And then not to spoil things, but as the story progresses, there is this interesting relationship between Sarah and Rick and Chris. And Chris gets kind of isolated and he gets put in a very bad place. And then the Headless Horseman is constantly involved in everything he's doing. And then you throw Claw into the mix. And it just, for me, it was one of these things that when I finished it, I just kind of quietly stepped back and thought, I wish I read this when I was 15. That sounds incredibly narcissistic.
No.
But, you know, it was something that I thought, I wanted to read a story like this, and I feel like I haven't seen something handle this subject matter in this way And that's what I always strive for as a creator. And now, to be fair, I think a lot of the stuff I'm heavily influenced by does do similar things. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to do it in a way that was different.
Mm-hmm. It's a great story. I mean, it really, like
it's
I said,
sweet. It's sweet.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it grabbed me right away when we see the horrific scene right at the very beginning, and then things just go on and the characters move forward. It's just an amazing thing. That last page, I tell you, you can't watch that without going, yikes.
Yeah, it is a rough moment. And what's funny too is I remember showing it to people at work as I was creating it. And every person I talked to, I said, did you see that ending coming? And everyone's like, no, no. And I said, well, good job on me, right? That's what I wanted. I wanted to, I don't want to use the word shock, but I wanted people to feel one way and then go the other way. Almost like the movie does it much softer, but do you ever see the movie Heathers?
No.
It's a good 80s movie. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Christian Slater and... Winona Ryder, I believe. I hope I didn't get that wrong. I think it's Winona Ryder. It's done slowly, but it has that sense of that movie slowly brings you in and you start realizing it's more horrific and more horrific, but it's a fun 80s movie on the surface. And it slowly starts to unravel and it gets kind of messed up. And that's what I was going for. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you had that reaction. It's weird when you do something, you don't know if people are going to take it the way it's kind of weird when you know what's going to happen and somebody else doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then you're thinking, I don't know if people are going to react this way, but this is the reaction I'm going for. And I feel like everybody I've spoken with has said, yes, they give me the reaction I've wanted.
So. That's right. Well, it's interesting because it reminds me very much when Star Wars first came out. There was a bunch of us that went to see it, and we went to see it, and we went to see it, and then the sixth time, we brought somebody else along to see it, and we sat there in the theater watching him to see his reaction, you know, instead of us, because we knew it was coming, we'd seen it plenty of times, and we would sit there and watch him and say, what'd you think of that? Oh, yeah, because that's kind of like what you're experiencing. You know it's coming, but you want to see how people respond. That's a very cool thing.
It is a fun – It's one of the best parts of being a creator is that when you nail it and people react to it the way you want them to, it's like making a song and you're like, I think the song is going to nail it. And then somebody's like, oh man, I loved, and people respond to all the things you wanted them to respond to. Mm-hmm. And that's a great moment as a creator. And again, to go back to it, that's where I was really grateful to work with Scout because I feel like they get it. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was putting the project together, that was a concern of mine was I think this works and I think this reaction is what I want. I don't know if that's how people are going to feel, but I'm glad it's working out for you and a lot of other people. And my hope is that when it's on comic shelves, even if people are like, this isn't really my cup of tea, I said this earlier, I want them to at least walk away and say, well, that was, you know, something I wasn't expecting, or I didn't really see things going this way. And as the story progresses, it just gets better and better with I really get room to kind of breathe and do the things I want to do and tell the kind of story Robert and I want to tell.
See, I was going to ask you about that because I was thinking you've set the standard or the bar really high.
I know. I'm in trouble.
You know, you've got to meet that now in future issues because that – I thought it reminds me very much of Stabity Bunny and Scent. There's a huge reveal at the end of the first issue that I used to scold Rick for. He would always spoil it. And I said, don't spoil it. That's a big thing. Let the people experience that for themselves. And it's the same thing with your book. Now you've got to go on and tell the story, which reminds me, how many issues are in this book?
Oh, it's a 4-issue book.
4 issues. Okay. So, and the first one comes out when?
It should be August 28th.
Okay.
So it's on pre-order now. So all the people out there, if you want to pre-order it, that would be amazing. You get a good discount. But yeah, it's August 28th, 4 issues. And they're all done. The artwork's all done. And it has been honestly probably one of the best creative experiences for me in my career right now. I loved working on Captives and I love working on Champions of Earth. But to get to make this kind of book and to get to work with a publisher like Scout, who's supportive and very helpful and doing their best, and all the people at Scout, you know, for me, they really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a strong sense of we've worked in comics, we understand the medium, And for them to kind of see what I'm doing and say, yeah, that works, let's do that, is great.
Because a lot of them are comics creators. James, Jim.
Yep, it's true.
A lot of Rick, of course, all these people involved with Scout are comics creators themselves. The one that I talked to during the open house was Tennessee, who was one of the higher-ups, but he hasn't written a book. Everybody else, they were kidding him because he's the only one in that upper part that hasn't written a book yet. So, of course, he's starting to try to write a book.
Right. Now he has to. He got pressured into it.
That's right. So now he's got to do that. I love this story. I love to be surprised. I can't wait. I saw the pages from issue 2, and I got to say, I'm just fascinated to see how those work with the story. You know, because you didn't show me the whole issue. You showed me several pages from it. And so now I'm kind of curious. Now what?
Well, I had to be careful when I sent those to you because I was thinking, well, don't spoil anything. let me get pages that – and you got to see the Headless Horseman in the pages I sent you.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that image is originally his head was on. And I said to Robert, no, man, he's a headless horseman. He's got to have his head off. So he's holding his head in his hands. And then later puts his head on.
That's okay. He doesn't have to have it off all the time. He can have it on sometimes, which is perfectly fine. But the fact that it's not always there is the key, which is scary.
That's what I was going for. It's just been a very fun ride. Honestly, creatively, it's been very I don't want to use the word draining. I want to use the word challenging. Mm-hmm. I really felt like I had to sit down and really – especially too because what was really important to me was doing it in 4 issues. Mm-hmm. Said, it's a new book. You're a new creator. We got to nail this and we got to do it in 4 issues. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I did enough prep work beforehand. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a writer, you're going to sit in a room – I would have days where all I would do is plot things out. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you got post-it notes on the wall. I just had different Word files and I would go, okay, let me piece this with this and this, and this will work with this. And then I have to do X. So it's one of those stories that for me was very creatively challenging. And I don't want to use that word. I want to say I really did have to sit down and put a lot of research and time, especially when you're working with something that references something from history. Mm-hmm. You want to take that and you want to make it into something interesting and exciting. Mm-hmm. It was a good challenge.
See, I have to say that I mixing the Salem witch trials with the Headless Horseman is that's not what jumps to my mind. that's what makes you a writer is that you're able to consider these things and make these things happen, which the rest of us kind of go, what? But that's a good thing.
Well, what's funny is I remember when I came up with that idea originally, and I remember pitching it to friends and family, and they said, how did you go from X to Y? Why would you think these two things go together? But for some reason in my mind, I thought, well, it's the East Coast, because the Headless Horseman, I believe, is out of New York. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the East Coast, and it's horror, and it involves witchcraft and black magic and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't you combine them? Mm-hmm. Right? And there's a way to do that that's fun. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going for. And I was very happy with that. I look back at some of the things I used to. So, back in the day, I just had a lot of free time. Mm-hmm. Like when you're an aspiring creator and you're kind of like still in school and all that kind of stuff, you have a lot of time to flesh out ideas and come up with stuff. And I look at some of the stuff I came up with and I was like, man, I don't know if today, with how busy I am, if I would be able to connect those dots as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm also grateful. Like, I feel like as any creator, write everything down.
Right.
Write everything down. If you come up with an idea, even if you don't think it's good, just write it down and put it in a file somewhere. And I think that's something I did a lot in the beginning was if I had an idea, I thought it was cool, I thought it could work, I would just make a file of it. I'd put it in a folder. And then later I would touch back and go, hey, this works. So this could be cool if I do this. And it's something I can't stress how important it is to do that as a comic book creator.
See, I always tell the story on this podcast about I interviewed this one guy who watched a documentary about slaughtering pigs. Mm-hmm. And he came away with a comic book. It was called The Slaughterman's Creed.
Nice.
And he did that, and I said to him, I don't know if I'd watch that documentary, come away with an idea for a comic book. I'd probably be, ugh.
I was going to say, what's weird about, and this is what's great about creators, is that I think everybody has different personalities and they have different life experiences. And the littlest, most obscure thing can totally change the direction of your creativity. Mm-hmm. And for me, growing up, you know, I was the kind of kid that just blew through my homework as fast as possible, mm-hmm. or didn't do it just so I could watch TV or read comic books. And for whatever reason, I always saw Headless Horseman stuff, mm-hmm. and I liked it. And then when I was in school, we had to do a whole kind of report on the Salem witch trials. Mm-hmm. And I think because of those experiences, when you become an adult, you know, I always call it going back to the well. I feel like as a creator, you should always go back to the well. You should think, why? I think I'm using that term right. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why did I decide to do this in the first place? Mm-hmm. What inspired me? Like, why am I here? Mm-hmm. You know. So I always do that. I make a very active effort to do that. And mm-hmm. you know, I go back and I look at all this stuff I really liked, and I'll think, okay, well, let's work with this, right? And I think mm-hmm. something that was probably helpful for me growing up was that, and not to say this in a negative way, I think a lot of comic book creators grew up with a lot of Marvel and DC and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And when they grow up, they want to make stories about that. Mm-hmm. And they want to take, oh, here's a story I read in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And now it's 2000 and whatever. And let me take that story from the 90s and the 80s and let me do my spin on it. And mm-hmm. I didn't approach comics like that. Mm-hmm. So I think because of that, it made it very easy for me to take lots of random things I like. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to make comics out of versus, and Champions of Earth is totally a reference to DC especially, mm-hmm. but to take things you were into and say, let's piece this together. And that's something I really like a lot about the Japanese comic book industry, is that they have such a huge amount of comics about everything. There's comics about driving cars. There's comics about eating food. There's comics about mm-hmm. people playing tennis. Mm-hmm. And for me, I said, well, let's do that in American comics, right? Not that mm-hmm. I'm making a comic about somebody eating food. I mean, I might want to, but yeah. I think just because where I came to comics from a different place, mm-hmm. like, I wasn't a big, like, superhero comic book reader when I was a kid. I actually got really into superhero comics when I was probably, I don't even know, like maybe like 17. Or 18. Like, I got mm-hmm. into it a little bit later, so I think I came at it with a different set of things I liked. Mm-hmm. So I always want to push those into things. I feel like if Marvel or DC ever hired me, I'd be like, hey, let's do an issue of Spider-Man where he like races a car with somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Let's do that. You know, mm-hmm. like, let's, because I like race cars, you know, mm-hmm. in this one comic, so let's combine those somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're looking. They're looking for new ideas. I'm going to be honest with you, because the industry is such, you know, let's say Batman's been around since like 1939. You know,
right.
After decades of storytelling, what hasn't been done? And so this is why when a lot of people were disappointed when Batman didn't marry Catwoman in the one book.
Right.
Everybody was so mad because, you know, that was something I hadn't seen, and I was actually looking forward to it. Now she's coming back and she's going to be interacting with him and stuff. Who knows what's going to happen. But I want to see something I haven't read before.
Well, I just feel like for me, my immediate thought is there is so much that hasn't been done mm-hmm. with mainstream superheroes. There's so much. I mean, there's mm-hmm. so many ways you can go about it. Mm-hmm. And I just think as a creator, you really need to take influences from other things. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, Frank Miller, apparently Ronin, was very heavily influenced by, I think, Japanese film and manga. Mm-hmm. And look how different it is compared to a lot of other stuff. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, I look at what I'm really into is pulp. Hmm. I love pulp stuff, and I look at a lot of pulp work, and also a lot of mainstream superheroes are very heavily influenced by the work that came out in pulp. Mm-hmm. Like, Batman is very heavily influenced by, in my opinion, The Shadow,
right.
and that kind of stuff. And
right.
you look at the kind of crazy stories people used to come up with, mm-hmm. with science fiction and fantasy, mm-hmm. and they're so wild and crazy. And mm-hmm. I look at stuff like that, and I think, well, why can't we take this and do this with Batman?
Yeah,
and they did. And they have. And it's been great, yeah. right? And people have liked it. But I think it could go even a step further. You know, like how far can we push these ideas and these characters in a way that I personally think, and this is my opinion, I think it's very hard from the perspective of a major, major company like a Marvel or DC to go too far off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have people who are expecting a certain product.
Mm-hmm.
And when you decide to go in a direction that's so different than what they're used to, I think it's hard. I think it's hard for an editor to sit in a room, and then I'm sitting across from him at a table in this hypothetical situation. I'm like, Batman in a race car.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, no. Like, you know how people are going to react if we put that out?
Well, it's interesting because there's a comic that's written by Tom Taylor. It's the only Spider-Man book I buy called Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
I'm sure I know. And, yeah.
In issue 6, which came out recently, Spider-Man gets a sidekick. And the story behind it is really an interesting take and a really interesting thing that I did not expect. A lot of people were – I was reading some people online saying, you know, I was about ready to give up on this book. But then when I read the issue 6, I was very surprised and I highly recommend it. What's going on is it's a very – actually a touching story if you get a chance to read it.
Yeah, I'm gonna read it now. You sold me. You sold me. Really, I want to read it.
Now, the one thing I want to talk about the book too is the fact that the scheduling is almost perfect. You know, this is a Halloween type thing.
Yeah.
It's going to start in September. That means you're going to
get basically September.
In August. Yeah. Well, September, October. It's going to summarize by the end of the year. It's at least going to take place during the Halloween season.
Well, I got excited about that because when we were originally putting the book out, the original release date, I wanted October.
Mm-hmm.
But the original release date got pushed to quarter 4, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, you know, if that's what it is, that's what it is, right? I have no control over that. And then, you know, fortunately, at some point, I got an email from James,
mm-hmm.
the publisher, and he said to me, hey, would you mind if I push you up to August? 'Cause are you good to go? And again, being fortunate enough to get to work with Robert, he's such a workhorse. You know, he's so prolific and he's just always drawing. He's always drawing. We were ahead of schedule enough. That I said, yeah, we can do August. That's fine. That's no problem. Because we're good to go. You know, so that's why I was pumped. Right when they said August, I thought, great. So that means we're going to at least have something on the shelves around Halloween time.
Yep, that's perfect. If there's some way to get it into the Halloween Comic Fest setup, their source, they should do is include this with that stuff. Because I think this is going to be something people are going to want to read. But, you know, I always think about Grant Morrison's book Klaus, which was about Santa Claus.
We talked about this, yeah.
It came out the worst time. I mean, it was ending in the middle of April. And I was like, how many people are still going on and read us a Christmas story in the middle of April?
Well, there is a certain – I've always found – I like to get excited about things that kind of happen at a certain point in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, right around September – mm-hmm. all I want to do is like draw monsters, you know, because I get excited. I'm like, oh man, Halloween's coming up, and there is a certain excitement to it. So for me to get to be able to be on the shelves around Halloween time, I was pumped. I was pumped. I said, oh yes, oh awesome, just so I could be excited. I don't know if it's gonna work, but yeah, no, I'm very pumped about that. I was really, really happy when I found that out. So,
yeah,
and I'm grateful that we were ahead of schedule enough that we could put the book out almost 2 quarters earlier than we were planning.
Mm-hmm.
But I think again, and I think that's where the self-publishing comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That because I've been doing it for a little bit, and Robert's been doing it for a while, and I've been working with Robert for a while, so we have a kind of flow that we're able to make things. And again, I'm going to give more credit to him because he's so good at what he does and he's so quick when he needs to be. Like when Robert needs to get something done, he's going to get it done. It was just a slam dunk for us. So,
right. Well, it's a great book too. That's the thing. I really enjoyed the first issue. The pages from issue 2 have me really excited to read that. So I can't wait to read this. So it's going to be good. Now, I highly recommend this is the time to get to your comic store and let them know that you want Headless from Scout Comics.
Yes, pre-order it now. This is the time to do it. And I'm probably going to be doing a few signings in Seattle.
Okay.
If anybody's in the Seattle area, I'm probably going to reach out to a few stores and try to set something up. So hopefully that'll be good too. So if you you pre-order your book and you walk into a comic book store, I'm in Seattle, I'm going to be so hyped. I'm going to be super pumped.
Well, I got to ask, if people want to keep up with you and stuff like that, you have signings and stuff. What's the way they can find out about that? What social media do you use?
Probably just Facebook. I remember last time I was on the show, I was like, I'm going to make this better. And I didn't. But right now, Facebook. But I am going to make this active effort probably in the next – I said this last time too, but this time I mean it. In the next month or two, I'm going to make this active effort to use other forms of social media because I actually don't – I'm not really into social media. I like it a lot to see things I think are silly. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. If I'm on social media, all I post on my Facebook is 80s movies or I'm really, really into City Pop, which is 80s Japanese music. Mm-hmm. Because I've listened to so much 80s music, I've run out of American 80s music, so now I have to float over to other countries' 80s music. So I just post stuff like that. But whenever I have an interview or a podcast, I'm going to post this on my Facebook. Also, my mailing list, that's a really good one too. So just go to frightcomics.com, and there should be a button there to subscribe to my mailing list. And if not, you could just email me at just message me on Facebook. Yeah, just type in my name. My profile is public. And just message me, and I'll add you to my mailing list. Just give me your email. But it's a super awesome time to be a creator. And then I also have another book coming out in 2020 I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh.
And then in addition to that, I'm probably going to have an announcement soon about the book I was working on with Gary Wolf, the Roger Rabbit creator that I told you about.
Yeah, last time I was wondering how that was going along.
It's going well. We're going to have an announcement for that soon. I can't talk about it just yet, but that's going well too. So I have I'm pretty pumped about the next year or two. I just have to make a very active effort to be really on top of everything and kind of just make sure I stay on the ball. And I've been pretty good about that. I have my moments, but in general, what's nice is that when you've been doing things for a little while and you have things in the back burner, when they all start to kind of come out. I have a fun book coming out probably in 2020. And then I have an announcement coming up for Killer Bowl probably soon. And then, and then Headless. And that's – Headless is basically in the can. So the only thing – I have to do some rewrites, very minor stuff for – because issues 2, 3, and 4 aren't lettered yet, but all the artwork's done. So I just do some minor rewrites for issues 2, 3, and 4, and then we're good to go. And then a fun idea to put out there, I'm considering making a video game out of Headless.
Okay.
So I've done – I have a little bit of schooling in that, and I really want to try to make a game out of it. So my hope is that once the book is out, I'm probably going to try to get a demo put together and then maybe try to crowdfund it, see what happens. But that'll be super exciting too. And then the whole game will be blue and pink, which will be awesome. And
next time they go to a video game place, it's going to say Headless on the top of the video game instead of Captives.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Maybe there'll be a Headless arcade and then people see with it. Yeah, I don't know. It's just it's something I've wanted to do for a really, really long time. I'm a big video game guy. I've always been into it for years. And that's one of the most amazing things about being a comic book creator is that you can make a comic and then later you could say, hey, maybe I can make a game out of it. Or maybe I can make – there's so much stuff you can do today as an independent creator that you couldn't do 10 years ago. And it's just incredible. Even a silly idea I have I'm kicking around. There's a lot of really cool craft breweries in Seattle. And I want to kind of roll into one of them and say, hey, if you're putting out any Halloween themed special beers, do you want to make a Headless one?
Right? Why not? That'd be good.
Right? So
that'd be fun.
We'll see. I mean, that's the best part. And that's what's awesome about getting to work on something like the Headless Horseman and Halloween themed and 80s themed and all that kind of stuff is that it allows you to kind of touch base. I'm going to be on a few 80s podcasts too. Okay. So I touch base with people from different genres and say, hey, people like Halloween, people like, beer, people like the Headless Horseman. Maybe we can combine those. And people like video games, people like this, let's put it together. So that's a few things I have in the back burner. But yeah, a lot is going on. This is just kind of the beginning of my launching point. And then I've told myself, okay, so basically in a few months, you're going to have no life. Your social life is going to end. You're just going to sit in a room and do work. And that's fine. I'm ready for that. So it's fine.
Well, that's good. Well, I got to ask you then, are you considering a Headless 2?
We are. We are.
Okay.
Robert and I, the comic ends, again, no spoilers. The comic ends on a note that's really asking for a sequel. It doesn't have to have one, but it would be nice. A lot of questions, not questions aren't, maybe, but a lot of things are kind of left to a point where you're like, And already what Robert and I have come up with, I thought this would be so awesome. Because the thing about Headless is that it's one of those stories, once the first volume is done, there is so much room to do so much more. It's just one of these books that I remember when I was doing it, whenever you write an origin story for a character, you have to do so much kind of exposition.
Right.
Which exposition is great because it's interesting because people like, oh, that's how this works, or oh, that's interesting. Like, but at the same time, for me, I would love to just make a sequel and be like, okay, we've got all that done, right? We've explained these things, and we could touch back to explain it again quickly, but we got that out of the way, and now we can tell different kinds of stories. And the story I have planned is definitely a very exciting and interesting one. I haven't pitched it to Scout yet. I don't know if they'll be crazy about it, but I remember when Robert and I kind of pieced it together, I said, this is awesome, and it's dark, and it really goes into something that happens at the end of the story that kind of begs what happens next. Like something happens in the story where you kind of go, well, how could you do that? Why would that happen? Like, that's just messed up. Like, there's like a kind of rough moment in the story, and you as the reader are like, well, I want more. But that's how I felt. Like, after I wrote it, I'm like, well, I want more. You know, like, this is the ending I planned, but where do we go from here?
Right.
So, yeah, well,
I'd like to see it.
If we do it, it's going to be great.
Okay, like, well, look forward to that. I'd really like to see it. And then with all the coverage you've gotten, and, you know, I'm hoping that the numbers will warrant it, of course, and maybe even get a collected edition.
Oh, I can't wait for a collected edition. That'll be fire. I'm like, so super excited about that. And then in addition to that, the way the kind of story shakes out, it has this very dark, I want to use the word almost like Bruce Timm, Paul Dini kind of feel to it. And I'm like, oh, I would love to just keep going in this direction. Like a really kind of dark version of something Bruce Timm would make, you know, or like Paul Dini. Like, I remember when I started seeing some of the pages coming in from Robert, I'm like, this is some really dark, like Bruce Timm kind of stuff you're doing here. And it's amazing. It's so good.
That's good. Well, let's hope it happens because I'd really like to see it. I've enjoyed Headless. Again, go to your comic shop and tell them you want Headless from Scout Comics. And the first miniseries will be 4 issues starting out in August, so you got to get there pretty quickly.
Yeah, you got to do it. You got to do it soon. You got to do it right now.
Got to get it done.
Right
so
now, at the end of this podcast, you can go to there's a comic site, Discount Comic Book Services, what you call it. They're offering like a really solid discount. You can get, if you pre-order Headless, you get the first issue for like $2.14. It's so insanely cheap. So you just go to that website and pre-order like 20, you know, because you're going to want to give some to friends and family.
Use it for Halloween gifts when you hand out stuff.
Halloween candy. You don't need candy. Right. Headless. Nobody's going to be ready for that. Here you go, kid. What's this? You'll love it.
Now, I've got to ask, too, you mentioned, well, I met you at a con. Are you doing any cons during the rest of 2019?
2019, no. I don't have anything planned. But 2020, I probably will do a few cons. I'd like to do Emerald. We'll see. I don't know. If I don't have a formal table at a con, if Scout's doing a con, I might show up. We'll see. But, yeah, I don't know. Part of my brain is thinking, you're going to be so busy. You could have, but then the other side of me, if it's doable, I'll do it. I think what's tough for me is that because I'm on the West Coast, I feel like I'm kind of limited. Who am I kidding? I there's a lot of cons on the West Coast, but I don't know if I'm going to make it out to the East Coast. Or like, I really, really, really would love to do a con in like a state that doesn't have big conventions. That would make me super happy. I feel like what's a bummer for people who like comic books is that you might live in a state that's in the middle of America and you don't get to go to San Diego Comic-Con usually because it's far. You don't get to go to near NYCC. So for me, I would love to get a chance to go to, you know, some random state like in the middle or somewhere around there that doesn't have a lot of big shows and get to meet somebody, you know, who reads comics and doesn't make it out to the big shows all the time. I know even there's like I met a guy who organizes a con in Alaska. I kind of wanted to go to that just to be like, hey, you know what? how many times am I going to go to Alaska to do a show? Mm-hmm. So,
well, that's good. You know, hopefully that'll happen. If you tell the right people, things will start to percolate. So sure. That's a good thing.
Well, things have been going well. And thank you so much for having me on your show, because I love being on your show. I know I talk a lot, but I love
being. Well, that's as I always tell people, as a podcaster, you don't want somebody you have to constantly pitch to try to get them to say something. I never have to worry about that with you, which is very a great way to do it. I love to have you on because you're fun. You say fun things and you talk about things in depth, which I really enjoy.
Well, thank you, and I love being on your show. So is there anything you tell me where we go from here? You're driving the car.
All right. Well, on that note, what we'll do is we'll call it quits, and I hope we get to talk again soon, because you've got some other good things that are really interesting. So much success with this. I hope Headless takes off and does really well for you, and we get to see these other projects coming. So keep it up.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.